Agency over here.
He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's recorded 25 studio albums, 2 gold, 6 platinum. He's influenced everyone from David Bowie to Tim Burton. And, of course, you got to list everyone in heavy metal, everyone in glam rock, every hair band, any rocker who's ever donned makeup or spandex. He's Alice Cooper, or at least he's been Alice Cooper for going on 36 years. And he's also very polite because he welcomes us to his nightmare. Once again, the groundbreaking album from 1975 has a sequel, and Alice Cooper is here. Hello. Thanks for coming on.
Sequels are dangerous, aren't they?
Yeah, sequels sometimes do well overseas or something. Now, okay, we have to get the nomenclature down. The albums seem to have the same name, but the first one is Welcome T.O. My Nightmare, and this is the number 2. So what's the shorthand
I'm
for
hoping
it?
That's not too clever. You know, yeah. Welcome to My Nightmare. Because every time I talk about it, I say, it's Welcome to My Nightmare. Yeah, well, I mean, the idea, it was just too good of a, you know, to play on words and to not use it. But everything about the nightmare, the early nightmare, was about from a 7-year-old's point of view.
Steven.
Yeah.
Yes.
Steven's like the little kid in all of us. We all have a 7-year-old kid in us. In fact, that's what my wife says. Women love men because there's a 7-year-old boy in them all the time.
A reformable 7-year-old boy, which is why women like him, yeah.
So his nightmare is always going to be something lives under my bed, something's in the closet, my toys come alive at night and try to kill me. And that was that nightmare.
Yeah.
And I said, what would happen 35 years later? What would Alice's nightmare be? Technology. He would still hate disco. You know, that would be a nightmare to him. Working in a cubicle would be a nightmare to Alice. You know, so, I mean, we started writing on that level.
Right.
But still, that little 7-year-old kid still gets through there.
The good part about growing up is that you realize the monsters under your bed aren't real. The bad part is the things that are real are a lot worse.
They are true. Actually, you can deal with the monsters under your bed.
Yeah. So the first, if I'm getting this right, the first Welcome to My Nightmare, that huge album, was huge for you because you were once the lead singer of Alice Cooper, but that was the album where you became Alice Cooper,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd walk down the street and people would say, hey, Alice.
Mm-hmm.
I was the lead singer in Alice Cooper. I was Vincent Furnier. But I finally just took on the name and legally made it my name, Alice Cooper. Now, the funny thing about when the band broke up, we went to high school together.
Yeah.
We knew each other before the band in track and cross country and all that. And when we broke up, we never broke up with any bad blood.
Mm-hmm.
There was no lawsuits. There was nothing like that. We just went in different musical directions. I wouldn't have done that album if I didn't have Bob Ezrin as a producer, because he's the other half of Alice. We bring out the worst in each other, which usually makes a good album.
You know? So was the calculation for you becoming Alice Cooper, was it just like, was it anything beyond, let me just give into this? I mean, is it the equivalent where maybe Debbie Harry could have said, fine, everyone calls me Blondie, I'll just change my name to Blondie?
Kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah.
It is kind of like that. But at the same time, you know, there was a creation of the character Alice Cooper. I play Alice. I write for Alice. I don't write for me. When I write songs, I write lyrics that Alice would sing. I write other songs and I go, wow, oh, Alice would never say that.
Right.
You know, we'll give that to somebody else. But we write for the character. We talk about him in the third person. Even my kids, when they were very small, the video would come on. They go, oh, look, Dad, there's Alice Cooper. They know I play Alice, but they know I'm not Alice.
And do you have people in your life currently who you're very close to who know you as Alice and not Vince?
Yeah. Pretty much, you know. The only person that calls me Vince is my mom.
Uh-huh.
You know, of course. She goes, hey, superstar, take out the garbage. You know, you know, moms are moms.
How did actually becoming Alice Cooper change you, maybe in a way that you hadn't thought it would, now that you don't have that step removed from the character?
Well, it's first of all, it's a totally unreal situation to be a rock star. You become other than human, you know. And I always try to tell people, the guy on stage up there is mythical. He's legendary. You're a different character up there. What killed Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin and just about everyone that died at 27 was trying to live that image off stage, trying to keep that character going. You have to separate the two. One is mythical, and then you have your real life, you know. So when I finally quit drinking, I finally got clear enough to understand that that's Alice and this is me. I can play golf, I can go shopping, I can get married, I can have kids, da-da-da-da. Alice wouldn't want to do any of that.
Right. See, I thought the same thing. I thought the delineation might have helped you because all these other rock stars think they're they don't realize it, but they're playing the role of rock star.
Yeah.
And it can, and it I mean, just recently was the
Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It can be a killer.
Well, it's so appealing to want to stay in the state of being that rock star on stage. And it's almost like a drug. I mean, you want to stay high up there all the time. But when you get off stage, then, you have to leave him there. I always equate it with Anthony Hopkins playing, a Hannibal Lecter. How much fun is it to play Hannibal Lecter? I mean, that's got to be the most fun job in the world. But when you meet Anthony Hopkins off stage, he's a beach bum.
Right.
He's out on Malibu just out collecting, totally opposite of the character.
Well, actors in their roles, that's one thing, and sometimes actors are typecast, and Jimmy Stewart always plays, and John Wayne always plays the same type of roles. But then there's the vaudeville thing, which I know you were friendly with Mae West and Groucho Marx.
Yeah, yeah.
Groucho Marx, I'm sure, was very quick-witted, but he didn't always wag the cigar in real life, did he? He didn't walk like that.
He kind of did.
He did? Okay.
He kind of did. He was, the thing about Groucho that was interesting was that presidents used to get in touch with him to read people. I mean, President Truman would write a letter to Groucho, and it would say, what's your take on this guy Tito? What's your take on this guy Castro? He was almost like a Kissinger character to the presidents, because he was very, very sort of a wise man. But at the same time, he was always Groucho. He used to chase my wife around the house. She was 18 years old, like a Marx Brothers movie. So I think that it was okay for him to do that because it was Groucho.
Did he actually, obviously he appreciated the theatricality and showmanship. Do you know if he appreciated the music in his private hours? Would he listen to School's Out for Summer?
I don't know. He was, all of his songs. In fact, I did a thing at a charity, a Frank Sinatra charity thing with him in the 70s. Marvin Hamlisch playing piano. It's Sinatra's thing, outdoors. And he and I did Lydia the Tattooed Lady. And it wasn't that far off from some of our songs, lyrically. It was in the same world. So I think that one of the great compliments I ever got was he saw the show and he says, Alice is the last hope for vaudeville.
Mm.
And I kind of said, well, he saw it as vaudeville. Salvador Dali saw us as surrealism. Everybody saw us as something different, But that for Groucho to say that to me, that was like, it was the greatest thing in the world.
And you, of course, have more tattooed ladies in your audience than he does.
That's for sure. Yeah, back then, that must have been a unique thing to have a tattooed lady.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of normal.
Now we call it the entire second row. I'm Mike Peskin for Leonard Lopez, speaking with Alice Cooper. His new Welcome to My Nightmare is out. He has a lot of pretty interesting things on an album, including an interesting pairing with a rapper who had one of the biggest singles of the last decade. How'd you get Kesha involved?
Yeah, Kesha was, the first idea was Christopher Lee.
Uh-huh.
To get from Christopher Lee to Kesha is a big swing,
Were hobbits involved in that transition?
Yeah, kept thinking, we had Vincent Price on the first one, so that was the classic voice, Who else is left from that era? Christopher Lee's about the only guy. And he was doing a heavy metal album with another band. I'm going, okay, best excuse I've ever heard. And I said, well, let's go the other way. Let's find somebody that nobody would ever expect.
That's true.
So I said, let's make Kesha the devil. On the album, she actually comes to claim my soul.
Yeah.
And the song is called What Baby Wants, Baby Gets. And
all
she
right.
just goes, hey, what baby wants, baby gets. Let's have it.
All right, Alice knocked it up. Let's knock it down. Let's hear a little of it.
Pretty face. Yeah, but I seen what's hiding underneath. You like my pretty mouth, but you got razor blades instead of teeth. And now we do tooth play for you. Oh yeah, tell me what you're gonna do. I'm gonna drain your veins and bathe in your blood. Honey, I've seen worse than you.
Now I've met Kesha. She's nice. She's smart. She did really well in her SATs, I happen to know. When you met her, does she realize she's playing a character as much as you realize you're playing a character?
I think she's living the dream right now.
Okay.
So she doesn't quite get the fact that Kesha's a character. She will. Mine was fueled by alcohol. So I kind of let the alcohol take over. And there was a big fog that I was living in for quite a long time, thinking I had to be Alice all the time, And then I watched my friends drop, one by one, and realized that there was a trick to this whole thing. Now, Kesha is great because I met her at the Grammys, and there was something more rock to her than diva. I kind of explained to her that, to me, everybody in the end hates divas. It's just part of it. You always end up hating the divas. Whereas everybody loves rock chicks. Find somebody to say something bad about Chrissy Hynde,
right,
or Joan Jett. They're rock chicks, and everybody respects that. Whereas there's a certain disrespect in the diva world, you know. I said, be a rock chick. Believe me, your career will go on forever.
Vulnerability, so she, I guess.
Well, and not only that, but she could be the next female Robert Plant. She's got the voice for it. She's got the look of it. Put a band behind her, a rock band, and she's going to be bigger than she is now.
Did you collaborate on the lyrics of that song?
The more disturbing lyrics were hers. You know, I mean, I was writing lyrics for her and everything, and all of a sudden I'm going to bathe in your blood. And, yeah, you know, I'm going, okay, I like that. Put that in. You know, yeah, she really wanted to get dark on this thing, and I went, let's go.
Tell me about the role self-censorship plays in when you write lyrics now.
Well, Alice has got his limits. I mean, as you know, first of all, I'm Christian. And so there is a point that since I write for Alice, he may slit your throat, but he would never call you. He'd never swear at you.
Uh-huh.
You know, because that would be totally against his, he's a gentleman, you know. That would be tasteless.
That seems an indictment of Christianity.
Yeah, well, I mean, the character I play is a definite villain.
When I
created him, I kind of looked around and I said, look, the world is full of Peter Pans and rock and roll, and there's no Captain Hook. I will gladly be Captain Hook. So that I created Alice to be that character. But there was a sense of humor in it, and I think that that sense of humor saves it, you know.
So then what over the years you must have encountered that fans don't get it in the way that you meant it. What do you do with that?
In the early days, that was really true. When we started, there was no internet. There was no CNN. So anything that I did on stage got blown so out of proportion that, I mean, we got banned in England, which was the best thing that ever happened to us.
I would assume, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We went right to number one. The record went right to number one. We sold out every ticket. And it was because of just the word of mouth, you know, what happened. And now you can't really be shocking at all. I mean, CNN has killed shock.
Yeah. Although, thank goodness for Lynn Cheney and those of her ilk who come around every so often and still find offense in an Eminem lyric.
Well,
you should send her a bouquet.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think we pretend to be offended. I think we pretend to be shocked. You know, Lady Gaga. Oh, listen. You know, Lady Gaga's pure vaudeville, and she's great at it. She's really good at it.
So you're a Christian. I think I read your dad was a preacher.
Yeah.
Have you always been a Christian?
Yeah. No. There was a period of time where I totally went. I was the prodigal son.
Right.
You know, I mean, I grew up in a Christian home. My dad was a pastor. My grandfather was an evangelist. I spent all my time in church as a kid, and I loved it. All my friends were Christian kids. When I became Alice, I went as far away as I could possibly go. And then I think God reeled me back in. He said, okay, enough of that. And man, now, I mean, I'm very much a Christian. I don't call myself a Christian. I try to live the life, you know. But that doesn't mean I can't be an artist. That doesn't mean I can't be an actor, you know.
Do you think you had more than the usual teenage rebellion against the father? Did you ever hate your dad? Or?
My dad and I were the best of friends.
Yeah.
My dad and mom were total supporters of Alice Cooper. And my dad was a pretty strong preacher. He was one of those guys that he'd be shaving, you know, and I'd go, okay, Ezekiel 5:36. And he'd go, got it. Okay, Daniel 9:21. And he'd go, well, da, 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 the Lord saith unto me. Then I'd say, who plays bass for the Animals? He goes, Chaz Chandler. You know. So my dad liked music. He liked the Beatles. He liked the Stones. He liked everything. He didn't like the lifestyle.
Right.
And he says, look, I can always support the music. I get what you're doing. He says, the theatrics are fun. I get it. But I can't support the fact of you sleeping with girls, you know, a different girl every night and drinking and this and this and this. And so we were on the same level. But he did see me come back, you know. So that was, you know, that was a full circle.
Yeah. Your dad died?
He passed away, yeah.
And so where in your career was it?
Right to 20 years ago, pretty much, he passed away. And that was just about the time when I became Christian again.
He saw your rise of redemption, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. So it was a great story. I mean, but, It's an amazing story. Yeah.
The thing that I always wondered about you is, would you be happier as, say, a studio musician where music was your life but no theatricality, or would you be better, would you be happier as an actor or the writer of a one-man show but without music in it?
Boy, that's a tough one because, you know, being a lyricist, you know, I would probably be happy writing Broadway shows, you know, lyric on a lyric level. But I don't know if I could exist without either one of them, you know. People always ask me the other question. They say, would you rather be a golfer,
right,
a pro PGA golfer, or a singer? And I go, look, golf's a fun game. I said, but, you know, the theatricality and the thing we created with Alice is what I do. You know, that's the fun part of it. But I do play 6 days a week, though. I abuse the game.
Right. Well, that's the old line about golfers, and all golfers want to be rock stars, or rock stars want to be or athletes. But you can't create your own thing as an athlete. You're not really an artist. You can perform something well. But...
Yeah, Dennis Rodman.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if you decide that if you can get 18 rebounds a game, you can have leopard skin
hair.
It's
still succeeding within the structure as opposed to redefining something.
That's it. That's it. You still have to play the game and do it right. Same thing with Alice. In order to be Alice Cooper, you have to have hit records. You have to play the same game Elton John does and the Beatles and everybody. You have to have those hit records.
We are talking with a guy who knows a little bit about being Alice Cooper, Mr. Alice Cooper. I want to thank you very much for joining us on WNYC.
Much to my surprise. Look at this heaven.